What up, y'all? How's it going? Oops, I clapped right in front of the mic.
We're really excited to see you too, Matthew.
Save that as an outtake, Natalie.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three radiant educators now.
Hey, y'all. How's it going?
Hey, friends.
So good.
We are almost at the end of May. We are approaching the end of the school year now. And I only have 1 week to go. I've got to say that I'm feeling pretty good. How about you guys?
Well, I'm feeling a little bit bittersweet. I also have 1 week left, but this morning we said goodbye to our seniors as they graduated and won't be seeing them again as they go to all corners of this great country for their college journey this fall.
That is exciting. And also, I'm only going to think kind thoughts about both of you as I still have a month left.
Oh no, Natalie.
If our listeners don't already know, besides being a teacher, I'm also a proud parent of a 12-year-old. And I am super fortunate to say that my child goes to the school that I teach at. In fact, he's even in one of my classes. And among other things, this means that we ride to and from school together every day. And in that glorious 15, 20 minutes in the car together, I have the opportunity to ask him about his day and what he did and what he learned. And I hate to say this, but in all honesty, his answer is some form of good, I don't know, and nothing. That's kind of how it goes. I'll probe him with questions. I don't remember. We didn't do anything. Natalie, you have a son in high school. Is it any different for you?
No, I'm just further down the path. So there's still a lot of one-word answers. And in fact, he graduates next month. And I feel sure that when people ask him, oh, how was high school? He'll say the same thing. Good.
Good. Okay. Yeah.
Fine.
I think it's, I don't think that we're alone in this. That's my, guess. I think it's difficult for most parents to fully understand what their kids are being taught in school on a regular basis.
To be fair, I think the kids are exhausted by the end of the day. They probably want to just set that in the school compartment and leave it there till they come back the next day. That's probably a lot of the reason behind the short answer, because we know there's a lot happening during the school day.
Yeah, totally. And on top of that, I think, like, realistically, communication between parents and teachers is limited, right? Yeah. But about a year ago, Texas did pass some pretty major legislation when it comes to curricular materials and what is being taught in schools. So today, I want to talk about House Bill 1605 on High Quality Instructional Materials, or HQIM. In 2023-24 legislative session, this was arguably one of the few success stories when it came to passing education legislation.
Fortunately, we have some expert voice on the topic with us.
We do.
For this episode, one in-house in particular, Lance, our very own co-host here, is well-versed in HQIM as he led his advocacy group for the last year through the Teach Plus Policy Fellowship around that work. And for this episode, Matthew and Lance both had the opportunity to talk with Ben Mackey, who was instrumental in the passage of policy that established HQIM here in Texas. Ben serves as the executive director of the Texas Impact Network, which is a statewide nonprofit that supports pioneering school systems in designing, implementing, and evaluating evidence-based practices and strategies that were made possible by Texas's historic school finance reform, House Bill 3, which was passed into law in 2019. So we have a lot of really good insight and voice to contribute to this episode.
I'm super excited to explore this topic today and to get the perspective from both y'all. So, Lance, could you walk us through what HQIM is and what you've been working on this year regarding it?
Sure. So as you did mention, it came from a legislation from the legislative session in spring of 2023. That was in the form of House Bill 1605. Mm-hmm. The rationale for this legislation, which Ben will get into as well, is a really simple and I would argue non-controversial one. Tell me if y'all disagree with this statement that all students in Texas should have access to rigorous and relevant curriculum at a daily basis.
I would have to agree. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hard to disagree with, right? And so this legislation, first of all, funded an effort to create high quality instructional materials, but also to implement a instructional materials review and approval process, IMRA, in case we'll use that acronym again later, so that there could be this huge database of HQIM that any teacher in Texas can access at any time for their class. Some of the requirements for materials to be qualified or classified as HQIM is that they fully cover the TEKS for the given class. I think that's kind of a no-brainer. They do need to be aligned with evidence-based practices in their relevant content areas. This IMRA process is going to start with reading and math, but is eventually going to roll out into science, social studies, and others as well. Also, good curriculum needs to support all learners, not just your everyday student, but students with disabilities or English language learners or gifted and talented students. HQIM also have to enable frequent progress monitoring, which is best practice for teaching anyways, and have implementation supports for the teachers that are using them. And when HB 1605 kind of came down the pipeline a year ago, it was like this idea was that it was going to solve a problem that the Teacher Vacancy Task Force had really highlighted, one of several. That being that teachers are spending a large chunk of their non-instructional time creating, implementing, or designing their own materials for their classrooms. So this kind of solves a lot of problems.
Yeah, and I can definitely relate to that last one, especially when I was starting off in teaching. I remember spending so much time outside of school on just creating materials, finding materials, putting together slideshows, putting together lesson plans. That is hard work, and it just takes time, unfortunately.
And it's unpaid time, and it's, right?
Absolutely. I mean, my weekends were spent, you know, in my room, in front of a screen, just like my weekday nights were.
I spend some of my time just tinkering and refining. I want this next lesson to be perfect. You know, it's if I just change this one definition or this one math problem, it's going to be so much better, right? And in fact, my group that Natalie mentioned found that about 90% of teachers in Texas spend over 3 hours a week doing that. And when the threshold is raised to 5 hours per week, it's still over 50% of teachers spending their non-paid, non-instructional time making great lessons for their kids, the ones that y'all's sons don't want to tell you about.
Right. That time doesn't include grading either.
For sure. Or any extra duties or extracurriculars that you sponsor, right? All of the things. Right.
So just for a quick recap for any listener who's not maybe in the field of education, in layman's terms, high quality instructional materials and the legislation around it is affording or creating ultimately a resource hub for teachers across the state to access what would be considered universally agreed upon high quality materials to utilize in the delivery of instruction in their classes.
That's precisely it. And just to tack on to that, these materials can come from anywhere. They're not necessarily being created by TEA, Texas Education Agency. They're not necessarily being created by textbook companies who we have contracts with. They're being created by teachers and then vetted through that IMRA process that I mentioned to go into the database for access for any Texas teacher.
You know, this isn't just a Texas thing, though, right? The emphasis on ensuring teachers are using curricular materials that are high quality and research-based is now something that's happening across the country. there's this big push going on from states to rethink what and how we're teaching students. And so one of the questions that I had for Ben was, why is this happening now in particular? And take a listen to what he had to say.
Nationwide, there's been a ongoing and growing conversation about what quality curriculum looks like and the need for it. And I'll give you a couple examples. I think the conversations, at least in the recent memory, started when Common Core was becoming a thing, but that was more a set of standards than a set of curriculum. And then obviously there are curriculums that followed that. The second is, I think that conversation started and then it started to raise some of these other questions. And so I think about the current discussion that's become less of a debate and more of a path around the science of teaching reading. It's become a more and more motion to be like, we need to do that because that is research-based best practices. And we actually have evidence that shows this works. So I think like that conversation is really the genesis for a lot of this conversation around high quality instructional materials. And then in Texas, I'll point to two things. Number one, I think the biggest first domino that falls was when in 2019, when they passed HB3, which was a whole school finance reform bill. And it signaled the legislature's attention and, you know, the priorities of the entire state government around education. So it put substantial new funding into schools. It started a whole new set of programs, mostly optional, that were really, really powerful. And have started to show some really beneficial wins, like the teacher incentive allotment, the additional day school year program, et cetera. Texas did a study, the TEA did a study. It basically mimicked TNTP's nationwide study called the Opportunity Myth. And essentially what they found is that, don't quote me on the numbers here, but 17% more or less of content taught to students was actually at grade level, not above grade level, at grade level. So Texas recreated that study. Good news, we did better than what TNTP found. Bad news is it was only 19%. And so we have this setup in Texas where we have very clear idea of the standards expected to be taught, whether it's a state standard or even, frankly, AP and some of these other ones. There are different standards for that, but still standards. And then we've got these exams at the end of the year that ideally test the standard. And then there's almost no conversation about what happens in between. And we'd leave that to teachers. And we've got phenomenal teachers that dive into this. Unfortunately, most of our education system isn't super veteran teachers that have really deep curriculum everywhere. Then you look, and then I give you another side. I've got a former student who is in her third year teaching, in charge last year, the year before, with planning all of the curriculum for eighth grade math at her school. She's a phenomenal teacher, but there is no way on earth that she should be writing curriculum from scratch. And you start to see these discrepancies, not because someone's trying to do this. Teachers are trying, they're already overworked. And we are asking them essentially to go and plan all of this work on top of actually teaching the kids, which is a whole job in and of itself. And so all of these things were culminated by the Teacher Vacancy Task Force, which was put together after the pandemic to find out what do we need to do to stem the tide of teachers leaving. They named a number of powerful factors, one of which was salary. But the second one was around overburdened, overworked, especially as it takes to lesson planning and designing curriculum. So all of these elements came together to say, we need to do something about this burnout problem and especially address this curriculum side. We need to incentivize and create ways for teachers to have access to high quality materials, meaning in this context, they are on grade level, they are rigorous, and they follow research-based best practices. We are not talking about a particular curriculum. A lot of curriculums and infinite curriculums could fit under it. But we need to increase that access for teachers so they don't have to spend a bunch of time lesson planning and doing all this stuff. Not to stop them if they don't want to, but not make everyone do that. So that's a long-winded answer, kind of like looping us to the past, which got us here.
Okay, so a lot to sort of digest right there, but I think so. I can definitely relate to a lot of what Ben had said in that clip. When I first started in education, I came in and I covered, you know, eighth grade U.S. history. But for whatever reason, I wasn't given the eighth grade U.S. history materials that had been used the previous year from that teacher. Those weren't accessible. And I don't know why that's the case, but I know that other teachers experience this, of constantly feeling that they're recreating the wheel here.
I think that there's something positive to be said for any teacher who's seeking to improve upon something, because maybe there is a good solid lesson in place and year to year, the teacher wants to tweak it to meet, you know, the what's relevant to their students at the time. Or maybe they recall that this sort of fell flat, and so this time around, I'm going to do this part differently. Like, there's room for that. And I see the argument of, you know, high quality instructional materials being so valuable in taking some of that load off of, especially teachers that are early in their career. Because to teach, to instruct is more than standing in the front of the room and reading off of a script. There's a craft to teaching in that delivery piece. And I think having the end goal, like the what is it that the kids are supposed to take away from this lesson, and sort of an outline as to how you get them there, is really valuable in giving new teachers or just the inexperienced teachers the opportunity to hone the delivery before they are really truly equipped to get elbow deep in the design.
Absolutely. And not only the delivery, but also just learning how to manage a class, right? Learning how to control a class of 30 plus students and not worry so much about the design, like you said. Lance?
Yeah, and chiming in on the curriculum part, Matthew, your experience is not a common one. It's one of many. One of the problems is the amount of variance there is in the access to resources that we have based on the district we are working for, based on the school that we work for, based on an administrator's willingness to spend money on professional development. When I first taught AP calculus, I would have really been treading water in the deep end for a mm-hmm. long time, except that my school paid for me to go to an AP Summer Institute where the general atmosphere and vibe was, oh, you don't have this curriculum? Here's a flash drive. Here's some papers. You know, here's what I do. I never had to invent anything. And if I hadn't attended that, it would have been a lot harder for me. There's also variance on the side of mindset of the teacher themselves. Like you said, I've been teaching Algebra 2 now for over 10 years. And I still spend many hours making my Algebra 2 lessons perfect every week. Not all teachers necessarily are going to be willing to do that.
No, definitely not. And for me, like, you know, honestly, the lessons that I am most invested in are the lessons that I create. And I'm at the point where I create everything on my own. But that's the interesting thing about HQIM is that this is an option. We're going to go into that in a little bit more detail later on in the episode, but this is the way that this is designed, at least in the bill, is that teachers have the option of using these deemed high quality instructional materials. They don't have to. Lance, maybe you could talk about the stakeholders here based on the research that you conducted. And then, Natalie, I'd love to hear from your perspective.
Yeah, stakeholders is everyone. All right, so next question. No, I'm just kidding. Stakeholders is from the top all the way down. It starts at the, you know, legislation that came out. Now it's in the hands of the State Board of Education and their process of review, as I discussed in the previous answer. The next level down would be school districts willing to sign on to this stuff, to disseminate these things to their schools. And then getting down to kind of our level as teachers, administrators have to really kind of set the standard. Like, well, here's something we're going to use. We're going to have access to this database and go spread your wings, dive in. Unfortunately, my findings of my group are that awareness is pretty low. Among respondents that we talked to this year, and these are pretty plugged in people, only about 30%, 3 out of 10 teachers are even aware that this is coming down the pipe, this focus on HQIM.
And HQIM, correct me if I'm wrong, Lance, did pass a year ago.
Yes, it's been over a year. Now, there has been a little bit of a gradual rollout as they, you know, iron it all out. But it's coming. In fact, teachers are pretty much on the doorstep of being able to submit their own lesson plans to the review process that I mentioned. And yet, if I walked around my campus right now, I'm not sure how many would even be aware of this.
Natalie, that's a great segue into your perspective here.
Yeah, I'm really thinking about this through the lens of teacher development, which is happens to be the sort of nature of the advocacy work that I led through Teach Plus as well. And all of these things that we work in terms of policy, they intersect. And this is a great example of how they do, because having a sort of resource like this can go one of two ways, right? For teachers who are in it for the right reasons and really looking for the opportunity to develop in their delivery, as we were talking about a minute ago, this is a great jumping off point. This is a great way to establish like a universal baseline in terms of an acceptable level of rigor, right? I also see the potential for teachers who are one foot out the door, or burnt out, you know, as we were talking about this being a measure to sort of help mitigate that. But the people who are already there, my concern is that it gives them something to access and utilize without real integrity. It would be easy to say, oh, I'll just pull from this resource. And I'm not suggesting that teachers across the board or by and large would do that, but I feel like we do need to acknowledge the potential for that just from a best practice standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one big question that our listeners have, or in myself included, is will this actually yield results, right? Or is this going to just be another Band-Aid to the problem? And take a listen to what Ben said to that question here.
Out of the pandemic, a number of school systems decided to pilot some of what they deemed high quality instructional materials. The state had released a very short list of here are some good ones that we'll help fund. We'd love for districts to start to pilot this. And so a number of districts around Texas tried it and piloted it in their classrooms, including Dallas ISD and a small subset of mostly elementary and middle schools. But others like Temple, Aldine, Lubbock, Amarillo, all also piloted this work. And far and wide, those systems have really shown some strong wins. And I'll find some, you know, I think there was some released information about the impact on student outcomes. But not just student outcomes, even though students did better, which kind of says, hey, if you get access to this high quality curriculum, students generally, if they get practice it, then they're able to repeat it on any sort of assessments later on. But also teachers and teacher surveys said that teachers, once they got used to it, actually really appreciated it. Now, these are particular districts. I'm not trying to make a general statement that everyone is going to appreciate it and all the case there. But those precursors did show some very positive wins. The fact about 1605, though, so it passed last spring, but it's on the slower implementation. So before we can just start, there's a whole bunch of rules around what becomes on this list of high quality instructional materials, which they are in the process of it right now. Where the SBOE and TEA will eventually certify what the high quality instructional materials are.
All good things. It sounds like it would be effective based on the pilot. But, you know, as a teacher, I can't help but have some skepticism around any push from the district to enforce teachers to use specific outsourced curricular materials. And Lance, I know you and your working group did some research on this as far as teacher buy-in goes when it comes to HQIM or any sort of outsourced curriculum.
As Ben was saying, we have to communicate these HQIM innovations and processes to our teachers throughout the state. And of course, there's going to be a lot of variance. That being said, teachers are pretty in favor of this when they know about it in such a way that Ben has been communicating through his interview and the state as well. Over 70% of teachers are positive to very positive on the innovation of HQIM. There's a little bit of variability when it comes to level of experience. We do find that more experienced teachers like us seem to be maybe a little bit more keeping at arm's length, the latest, greatest innovation into our classrooms. But in general, teachers are in favor. So what we're going to really need to see innovated is that implementation piece. And my group has found that implementation at the district and campus level is going to be key. Teacher supports, PDs on best practices, ongoing support for teachers as they roll these things out. And also, as Ben really highlighted, a lot of flexibility for teachers to make autonomous decisions on what they do or don't use in their classrooms when it comes to HQIM.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, there's one more clip where he talks specifically on this idea of autonomy, implementation, flexibility. Let's take a listen real quick.
Important to differentiate a key here, which is concerns about the theory or even the bill itself and the theory about the implementation, because we know a ton gets lost from policy down to implementation. And I could share a lot of different examples, even some that everyone would agree, like that's a great thing, like lowering class sizes. If implemented wrong, could be very ugly. And there could be a lot of concerns with it. If it happens in the middle of the year, we just pull apart classes, et cetera. And so I think that's a really key thing. And I think there are some key implementation concerns anytime you do curriculum. So again, not necessarily around the curriculum itself, but some of the key concerns would be, how does this roll out? First of all, I've got this new curriculum. Am I being trained on how to use it? If there's not, then you just get, you get a whole bunch of directives with not a lot of like understanding about why this makes sense or why it doesn't. Number two, the amount to which you have autonomy. A key here around this is high quality instructional materials are meant to be a floor, something where you don't have to create it. But I can speak to the intent when it was being discussed was to make sure that teachers also have autonomy here and can adjust and edit and expand and kind of move it and make it make sense to their students. But that's harder to do. And so there's always a fear that micromanagement would occur or you need to stick to a script, which again was said top to bottom, like that is not the intention here. Third could be some sort of punitive measure. Someone feels like you're not implementing with fidelity, it can make a headache and that there's a miscommunication between leadership and teachers trying to implement this or work through it for the first time. I think anything like this has a potential to be rolled out in a way that is micromanaged, is doesn't have flexibility, is standardized across the board. And that's really not the intention of all of this. It is to standardize the level of rigor that students should get in the classroom, but there should be tons of flexibility in terms of how a teacher adapts that to their students and their classes. And I think the other big thing is that learning from what happened after House Bill 3 back in 2019 and what worked, this is fully optional. So districts don't have to do this whatsoever. They can adopt whatever curriculum they want and continue to do that. They don't have to adopt it in every class. They don't have to adopt it in every school. They can look at the different, like they can create different ways to set this up in a meaningful way around their campuses. But a lot of people hear this idea of this bill and think it might be required. Just because a district or even a school is requiring something exactly standardized is not necessarily in the law. It's around implementation and leadership. And it would be my posit that like until we had, like at the heart of good, effective implementation comes strong leadership. And where you have strong leaders, you'll see it roll out in a way with teachers, and teachers are seeing it as a benefit. I really believe that.
Natalie, do you want to talk a little bit about that piece on leadership there that he mentioned?
I do. I really appreciate in that clip how he names the efficacy of this sort of resource available to teachers being directly tied to the way that it is implemented and followed up on at the campus level. Because he makes the comment about taking this, you know, baseline information or presentation of material and making it make sense to your students, to your learning space, to your learning environment. And in my research around teacher preparation and development, that is one of the key areas that teachers do not feel strong in, especially in the early years of their career. So I think that this could be hugely valuable. I also want to name another potential concern that I think veteran teachers have around HQIM. If we allow there to be this sort of leverage in resources on what we do teach, are we in some way, you know, affording those powers that be more leverage in dictating what we cannot teach? I don't know if that's a real concern, but I think it could be something that occurs to people.
Yeah, absolutely. And very serious one at that.
I think from the top to the bottom, just as in any arena of education, innovation, there needs to be some respect thrown on the professionalism and abilities of the classroom teacher. And in this particular case, we need to understand the difference between a first or second year teacher and a super veteran teacher.
On that note as well, you know, we live in the second most populated state in the country and definitely one of the most diverse states in the country. And so the idea that one set of curriculum is going to, you know, work for all of Texas's students, you know, that's probably not realistic. You have to have options and you have to have flexibility. But going back to what you said earlier in this episode, the question that you posed, do all Texas students deserve a rigorous curriculum? Absolutely. And I think Ben said the, what was it, 17-18% of what students are being taught in Texas is on grade level. Well, this is, you know, bringing light to that and addressing that problem. So I hope that our listeners have a better sense of what HQIM is and its potential impact. Moving forward, I think there's a lot to be on the lookout as far as how your districts, your local districts, decide to implement this. And going back to the car ride with my son to and from school, I don't know if I'm ever going to get all that much out of him directly in terms of what he's doing in class. But I am optimistic that this new attention toward providing teachers with research-based curriculum and the materials is a big step in the right direction.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
And if you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.